Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, my next guests are involved with the new film, Most Likely to Murder, which is available now on digital DVD and on demand. The comedy is being billed as a home for the holidays murder mystery. Think Hitchcock's Rear Window, but set on a Thanksgiving weekend. You know, that one where you come home to see all your high school friends. The film proves that you really never can go home again. And if you do, there's probably a murderer living across the street. You know that old saw. The comedy stars Rachel Bloom, Vincent Kartheiser, and Adam Pally. Pally is known from his work on television with sitcoms like Happy Endings and The Mindy Project. He's currently is the executive producer and occasional actor on The President's Show on Comedy Central. Most Likely to Murder is co-written and directed by Dan Greger. Greger is a longtime comedy writer who's worked on How I Met Your Mother and currently on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which also stars Rachel Bloom. This is Greger's debut feature film, and he's used a lot of his friends from his days coming up at UCB in New York and Los Angeles, including star Adam Pally. Both Pally and Greger are in studio tonight.
Hello.
Dan. Hi. Adam, good to see you. Thanks
good
for being
to see
here.
You too.
I love this concept. Let's talk about the murder mystery.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, you know, congratulations on the film. It's great. And I love the when it sets up, you really set it up as, you know, a high school popular kid who gets to go home on that Thanksgiving weekend. Talk about how you get from that to the murder mystery.
You know, the movie in conception, like, started with, like, we really love that night, right? The night before Thanksgiving where everyone's back in town and you all go to the local bar that you got in before with a fake ID because they didn't really care. It was sort of Facebook before Facebook,
right?
Where you're just like, oh man, that's what happened to that guy. And like, oh, she's pregnant now. Oh man. And so that sort of moment where you're really like inundated with nostalgia and often you are desperate to like get back to it. But that also that realization that you'll never get it back. There is no going back, like
right.
You said. And so we really wanted to explore that emotion. But we sort of realized there's probably enough stories about, like, you know, 30-something white guys being like, I'm not young anymore, that we wanted to put a twist on it
right.
And give it some more stakes and energy.
We'll stay with the coming home, going back to your hometown, your high school. Adam, for you, is any of it feel nostalgic? Any of it feel relatable? The idea of coming back to town feeling like you're going to mop up and instead kind of being pushed aside?
No, not really. I mean, I not on that level. I think to me, you know, I moved around a lot as a kid, so I never had like a legit like hometown love affair. Like I never, you know, I was always kind of like moving. But what is relatable is the idea of like when you leave high school, you're creating a new kind of, it's like now this is my new self. And then you do it again when you leave college. And then, you know, there's like oftentimes in your life where you're like, I'm starting anew.
Right, right.
And it was interesting to me to play a character that kind of like never did that. And so expected no one else to do that. And so that was the most relatable thing to me.
It is relatable, Dan, and just in the way that everyone who's going to watch the film is going to understand the concept of coming back to Thanksgiving weekend at home. What I love about it is there seems to be a lot of change.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody around is changing. The character of Billy doesn't. That's the comedy. But this concept that, yeah, people are different than when they were 18 to when they're 35,
yeah.
What have you.
Yeah, that was a really important part for us is that, you know, especially looking at the kids that maybe growing up were more outcasts, that were put upon and you maybe didn't have it so easy. And only as an adult do you realize, oh, those were probably the kids most in need of like sympathy and decency because they probably had like the hardest home life and actual they were dealing with, whereas like, you know, I was just getting drunk in high school and it was super easy.
we should ask you to, are we allowed to curse?
You're not, but that's okay.
Right,
okay, we'll get
so
it in post.
Did I curse?
You did again.
I don't even know when I curse.
Doing this on the whole
I don't even know when it comes out of my mouth.
Dan cannot. It's crazy. It's like he's an old-timey sailor.
I'm never
insane.
Around children.
I've never seen anything like it. It's like no awareness.
Truly,
Dan curses like I smoke weed. Everywhere.
I don't even know.
Doesn't matter where.
It doesn't
right?
matter where.
Where did I curse just there?
Didn't hear that?
I couldn't even tell you.
I was
where
tempted
I
to hit your cough button. You know, I think you might have said it twice.
What did I say?
It's only one time. Only
right.
one
what
time.
Did I say?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, you can't repeat
we're
it.
We're mature enough to not care.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
That's the thing. We're intelligent.
Cursing is.
Got it. Got it.
Is permitted
not permitted.
Permitted?
It's not permitted.
Not permitted. I'm not trying to, I promise.
He's going to do it again. He's going
to
do it again. It'll happen 15 minutes from now. We will have all forgotten
forget this conversation.
And he will do it again.
I have no short-term memory. I don't know what we were talking about.
Well, let's
imagine being directed by this guy.
I have a whole line of questioning about improv. You guys have spent a lot of time on stage and improv and learned a lot about the techniques and how much of it do you expect to be a part of your films? How much does improv play into what we see in Most Likely to Murder?
on a broad level, the ethos of improv of like supportive collaboration is everything. You know, that I've tried to have a set that's very much like go with the best idea. Everyone's bringing something to the table. Let's keep building this together. And then once we get on set, it's a weird balance because on a low budget movie, you are these days are tight. You right, do right. not have a lot of time to mess around. I didn't say the other way to say mess around, which I was about to.
See?
I caught myself. Yeah, exactly. I'm proud of myself right now. So, you know, there isn't as much improv as I would like to do because we have some of the best improvisers in the world in this movie because ultimately, you know, these things are going to get cut. But we still did have a ton of improv. And, you know, usually the way it goes is like you get it right, you get it once for safety, and then you play around.
But you have to be organized. That's the big difference, right? This isn't the group getting together at night and let's just see where it heads.
And
you
this isn't Judd Apatow, who has, you know, months and months to overshoot like crazy and can improvise everything a dozen different ways. This is, we're shooting like 7-8 pages a day, which is a ton of work.
Yeah, right.
And so we had to, you know, really target where we could sort of bifurcate our lines and our concepts.
How much did you rely on what you've learned in your improv life, Adam?
Well, I think what I've learned in my improv life is probably the number one kind of, as Dan was saying, thing that I try to, all the things that I've learned about being an improviser on stage, I try to apply to my life because they're, without being too like hippie-ish about it, you know, the similar thing about improv and life is that you don't know what's going to happen next. So you're living every moment of every day with no idea what's going to happen next, but you think you do, so you can kind of like anticipate. And that's really all improv is just kind of like assuming something and anticipating it and
being
kind
prepared,
of
right?
being prepared in that way. So it's kind of just like walking into the improvisation, if you know what I mean, is like that's kind of how I hope to be, is that I just like walk into it. So I always use that stuff. Like I think at its core is like the way you want to feel. And I think as an actor, you try to even use those rules of improv in when you're acting. So it's like small things like make a choice, you know, like everything you do as an actor, you can make a choice. The way this guy picks up the coffee, the way that I turn to Dan.
Yeah, he has a great moment in the movie where he's going to an old friend's house and he's got a knock on the door. But Pally just did a great job of improvising. Like, well, he's knocking on the door of a friend that like he looks down on already, is like already bothered to be spending time with him. And so he knocks like endlessly and aggressively, like, where are you? Where are you?
And I dump the scooter like right on the yard.
It's got just
like, you know, and so like stuff like that is like, it's improvising. You're in the moment, like deciding that you're in this character, you're going to act this way. So you're always kind of doing that stuff. And I think that's where I take that training from. And then like other, there's so many little things that I like picked up along the way that I apply to every, like another thing I said to Dan this morning was a teacher along the way told me this sentence, like, if this, then what? It was like such a small little like improv-y nerdy thing, but that is like such a key, because then you start thinking like, well, if I'm this, I do this, and I do this, and I do this, and that's kind of the way that you act, you know?
It's amazing to think that too, because when you watch the character of Billy in this film, you do see a lot of choices being made, choices that define who the character is, and that could be anything from, like you said, like dumping the scooter on the lawn, the way to knock the door, or even how he acts when he's drunk.
Yeah.
Everything about it that may not necessarily be in the script.
Yeah.
It may not necessarily be direct notes from Dan, but it's something that you bring to the character because you're living that character.
And I think those are the best performances. I think from seeing myself, like that's where I'm the best, is when I'm able to be like fluidly making choices in everything. Especially like I did a play this year and it was the first time I'd ever done anything like that. And that was very much like, you're saying the same exact words every night, like to the period and the comma. Like, and so what you have to do is figure out ways to improvise every night for yourself in that character. And that is, to me, I was getting the same rush from doing that as I was from going out on stage with nothing and getting something. And so that, and I feel the same way when we do big movies and there's like $1 billion on the line and they're like, jump from the second floor window. And you're like, what if I do it like this? You know, like the same thing.
Same idea.
Yeah.
To Pally's real credit, you know, there is a difference in the type of improvising actors do on set. There's great improvisers who show up on set and will do the lines and then riff in whatever direction's funny, right? That makes them laugh. It makes even the set crack up. The crew laughs. That's always like this like weird sort of fool's gold, because like when the crew is laughing, you're like, well, I know this is really fun. But in a very plot-driven movie, is it on story? And Pally's real skill is that he improvises within story. And so you never, like, our first cut of this movie was 2 hours and 20 minutes. Nobody wants to see that movie. And that's because
Except you actually did want to see it.
I fought tooth and nail to keep it all in. But, you know, that's because that's all that great improv is so funny and I love it. But eventually you're like, oh, I realize that the story is sort of falling away and we need the plot to really fly.
Dan Greger is the director. Adam Pally is one of the stars of the film Most Likely to Murder, which is available on digital DVD and on demand. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll continue the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio tonight, Dan Greger and Adam Pally. Dan Greger, the co-writer and director of the film Most Likely to Murder. And Adam Pally is the star. You can find it on right now. It's released on digital, DVD, and on demand. Talk about this, the concept of skipping the theaters. I mean, this is something that you're seeing more and more films do, and just skip theatrical entirely. And it's not the old way where it was maybe a Steven Seagal movie we're talking about.
Yeah, I was saying before, yeah, it's not the type of movie that goes straight to demand. This is not the same thing as Liam Neeson in front of a bunch of fire. Like, this is
a bad Photoshop.
And then in the corner is like Andy Garcia
and a wolf.
And then the other corner is a wolf. And then Diane Lane. We made this movie through a digital department of Lionsgate, which is a studio. And we kind of, I don't know, this is how we watch movies. You know,
I think the surreal of it is that there's just this difference between being a big Marvel movie and then being a movie that is really meant to be, you know, hang out with your friends, watch a movie on a Friday night, like in your house with your, you know,
with wine,
Netflix and chill kind of movie.
Yeah.
And obviously, with the streaming networks now, like Netflix or Hulu or Amazon, even, you're finding different ways to actually be able to produce these films and get and distribute them.
Mm-hmm.
Does that change the way as both entertainers and artists and writers and actors see the world that you live in? I mean, is there opportunities now that were never there before?
Yeah. I mean, it's all a give and take. There are way more opportunities for writers and actors to work and to grow through the industry than ever before, just because there's more stuff shooting than ever before, because there's more outlets than ever before. However, the compensation on that is sometimes not even enough to live off of for a lot of these places.
You need to work a lot more.
So it's not
the one job every couple of years.
Right.
It's like, I'm going to have to do three or four things right now and really stack stuff. And honestly, as creators, it's kind of more satisfying anyway. You were making more things, and you're in it more. And
Dan doesn't have children, so as soon as he has a kid, and he realizes that his brain is now gone and he can't think of any good ideas, he will want to make money off the things that he did in the past.
You know, I'm going to reboot this movie.
Both of you guys spent time in New York in the improv scene there in UCB, which is obviously has roots in Chicago, went to New York. But I love it because you guys are early adapters in a way, because now you think of UCB both in LA and New York, and you guys both still perform, but man, it's a whole different, it's a university as opposed to a small, like used to be a laundry dry cleaner. So talk about what it means that you guys were involved with UCB when you were in the early 2000s and how that helps you in your careers now.
I mean, the biggest thing for me was like when I got up at UCB, I started, my sketch group had a weekly show. We had an hour to ourselves every week for a year to do whatever. We put up our best of, we refined our best of sketches, we put up new stuff every week, we made a bunch of short films, and just having truly that space to grow and test yourself and keep honing and refining is. That's it. That's the 10,000 hours. That's how you get it, that you become an expert in something and actually have it in your bones about like what works, what doesn't work, by just doing it over and over and over again. And I just know that like that's the hardest thing about these big mega improv theaters now, that to get that type of stage time would take years and years at this point. It would take much longer to get that level of experience.
And there is something not only about the discipline of being able to get the stage time and learn and make mistakes, but there's also something about the relationships formed by doing that and being in your sketch group and doing that every week for years. You're finding relationships, and those relationships are, I would assume, what you're relying on as you move forward in your career.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in the beginning, for sure, they are the most important, because they are the like-minded people who speak your language. And I think then they can continue to be valuable, but I think that it is a responsibility of the improviser and the entertainer to grow and learn how to work outside of that.
That's a really good point, because there's a lot of times that people will be that don't make that jump or don't have the skills to be able to get outside of the ensemble. And you see that.
And sometimes just the, I don't know a better way to say it, but like just the bravery to take that jump.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy. I mean, like, it's great to have a like a home base and you're performing every week, you're getting laughs every week, but it's really important to step outside your comfort zone.
It's one of the things that Dan and I, as kids at the theater, would talk about this quite a bit, because it was just something that we both struggled with a lot. But it's like, once, yeah, we're at an improv theater and there's a community and it's you know, really supportive and all that stuff, but you are an actor and you are a writer,
right?
And you have to own that, and you have to be able to work with other actors and other writers and other directors. And you can't just be this ethereal guy at a theater. I mean, you can, but like, that's not what we wanted.
Right. I mean, I remember my sketch group coming up, so Donald Glover was in our sketch group, and obviously he was quite talented. And it was one of those things when he broke off because he started being super successful, there was a moment I was like, but we were going to be a sketch group together forever. And like, it obviously took me a moment to realize, like, wait, this guy's an unstoppable force. He's going to be a big star. And being on the other side of that realization, where it was like, oh, wait, no, like, he doesn't owe anyone anything other than his own success.
And so it filters through you, but it also filters through, it's like, everyone around you doesn't owe anybody anything, but you also are not owed anything.
Right.
And I think that sometimes that's a tough lesson. And I forget it often. And I, you know, it's something I try to rely on the most, which is something you really have to step outside of that theater to realize.
Right. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break for the news, and we'll continue the conversation. Adam,
wait, they're
Pally,
doing the news on this show?
They do news, yes.
They break this up
they
with the news.
The news is... Adam Pally, Chance
Frederick, Rob getting Martiro their news
will be doing it. Yeah,
this
no, trust me, that's at the news is everything. This is filler. The new film is Most Likely to Murder. It is available right now on digital DVD and on demand. We'll take a quick break, get the news, come back, and continue the conversation. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guests in studio tonight are the co-creators, the directors, the actors, the stars of the new film Most Likely to Murder, which is now available on digital, DVD, on demand. In studio, Dan Greger and Adam Pally. Both longtime improvisers and actors. You've seen them in different sitcoms and writing, and both in front of the camera, and executive producer of The President's Show on Comedy Central. As we were talking about before, about improv and how the world works, that Donald Glover story is great, because both of you guys had a lot of success, but I would assume that, you know, it's all supportive at one point, but when you start to get the audition and you start to make that break and get a chance to be on Birbiglia's film, you know, like being on Saturday Night Live or you know, How the Others Feel.
Yeah, I was in that movie.
Yeah, right. So,
yeah,
but the idea.
Curmudgeonly SNL, right?
Yeah, I was Colin Jost.
So that concept is one that, like you said, bandied about the improv theaters for a long time. This idea of when other people have success, especially have to break out of the ensemble. How do you guys deal with that? Is that something you even think about as actors and directors?
Honestly, like, I really think Dan will back me up on this. I never had that with other people. I never...
Pally was the most confident person in the world, so I don't think... Pally was ever afraid of being left behind.
I don't know about that, but I never had that. Like, when I see a friend succeed, I really only feel positive for the friend, and if anything in myself, it makes me, like,
motivates me.
Yeah, right. I never... Even, like, movies I've lost or things that, like, I never... Rarely am I like, that guy,
yeah,
like,
yeah, right,
what?
Right,
like,
right.
I never... feel that, because I don't know. My dad taught me a long time ago that if this is what you're doing, then this is what you're doing, and your journey is going to be like a roller coaster. So just because you're at the bottom of it and a friend of yours is at the top doesn't mean that he did something
right.
to you or that, you know, it's like...
Pally, I can't disagree with you more.
but that's my own. But that's my own.
I love that you're
look,
saying that.
There's other.
How you felt? I was a wreck of nerves and fear constantly. You know, and there is a separation between like a bitter animosity, jealousy, where
right.
it's just like that guy for
right.
ah.
I told you it was going to happen.
That guy for succeeding.
I told you it was going to happen. And it happened almost, I will say, almost to the minute of when I said it was going to happen. And it happened.
You guys are working together way too long.
That is the best.
My schedule.
Yeah.
But
here's this.
Yeah.
It'll happen again.
Guys, I make this solemn vow that I will not curse a single more time.
Now he wants to do it.
He's got a slight OCD.
He's going to want to get a third.
Now it's right at the end.
If we don't get it, I know he's going to bail me out at the end and just do it.
That's the blackout line. Let's
comedy brains, comedy minds in studio.
Our very good mutual friend, Gil Ozeri, who's a brilliant performer.
Maybe the funniest person I've ever met.
I will always remember a conversation we had when we were coming up. And we were friends with all these great, funny people at UCB. And he said, he just said, like, in this very, like, self-defeated way, he was like, what are the odds that of all the people here that, like, we're all going to, like, work and be successful? It's like maybe, like, 1, 2, 3 people. And you think we're in the 3 funniest people here? And it really broke my heart because I was like, well, no, I'm not, like, in the top 3 out of, like, the 300 people here. And but he was wrong. That's the thing that was so wonderful about it. Everyone who stuck it out, who worked really hard and kept developing themselves, like, did find a really wonderful career for themselves in a place and really made great, like, comedy.
As someone who's I'm an astute observer of it, because I know a lot of the comedians who are coming up through from time being in comedy, that there are generations. And you will see generations like your generation that will just have such success, and you'll see shows on Comedy Central, or you'll see shows that are or movies like this, where you start to see a group of comedians start to have, over and over, they have success. And there may be roller coaster in there and their personal careers, but they're making the greatest stuff. When you go and see what's happening with Broad City, or you're seeing shows out of other shows, present shows, a great example.
Mm-hmm.
You recognize, this is a group of people who performed and came up together. They've evolved together on bare bone stages on Wednesday night shows at 11:30 at night. Yeah. And it shows. And there's something beautiful about the idea that the time has been put in. It's not an overnight success. The time has been put in for you guys to have success.
That was a very big part of this movie for us, was that, you know, Pally and my writing partner, Doug Mand, were roommates in New York. And when I graduated college, I couldn't bring myself to move home, and I moved onto their couch. And we were just broke and trying to make comedy. And this movie is in so many ways what we were trying to put together for the last decade plus, that just we know that we can do this together, and we put all the work in to do all the sketches, all the improv, and then find sort of our career success outside of it, and then to come back and be able to have something that had this enormous groundwork between my Rachel Bloom, who was in the same sketch group that I was after I left, and Pally and Doug, and to be able to, like, have this sort of family come back together and create something that we're immensely proud of is a dream, and so satisfying.
When you look at your careers and you think about it and you try to take the view as you're in the middle of it, is this what you guys said? Is this why you moved to New York? Is this why you set up shop to do comedy, is to get in the opportunity to work together and to do films like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is why we left our day jobs. I moved back to New York to do comedy, to figure out how I was going to do comedy. And very instantly, I met Dan and Doug and realized that the way you do comedy is you collaborate. And so, like Dan was saying, this is the lesson we learned from that, is that every part of your day and job can be a collaboration, and that will make a better day.
And I remember I started at UCB, I took my level 1 class or level 2 class, and I was so enamored with it. And I went home that summer, I was still in college, and I went home that summer to my high school friends, and I was like, we need to start a sketch group. And I, like, forced all of my high school friends to, like, be in a sketch group with me, and none of them cared. None of them were like, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? I really just force of will, like, made them spend every, like, Thursday night with me doing improv, and they'd never, like, me trying to reteach them my level 1 lessons.
Mm.
And we put up a show, and it was, like, very bad. And I realized, I was like, oh, I need to cultivate, like, an actual group of people that want to do this, right? that this, everyone is sort of like seeing the mountain in the distance, and we're all walking towards the same thing.
For people who might be listening who haven't made that jump, or might be someone who's like, I want to do what you guys do. I want to be able to make a movie like Most Likely to Murder. I don't want to say advice, but when the idea of jumping, saying, I don't want to do this day job anymore, I want to find these like-minded people. What do you recommend? What are some of the lessons you guys learned early on that you would either say, don't repeat, or
I mean, again, like, I go back to my dad who taught me a lot of this stuff because he was an actor for a lot of my childhood and then decided he didn't want to do it anymore. So he had a lot of advice and insight to me. And one of the things he taught me early on was, again, if this is what you're doing, then this is what you're doing. So my parents never made me have a fallback plan or anything like that. They just demanded that I do it every day, and and that this is what I was going to do. And so once you do that, and I remember when Dan's one of the few people I know that was also a great executive in comedy.
I got out of college and I got a job in comedy development at HBO. That was my first job, and it was a good education.
Yeah.
I learned about how things actually get made. But I mean, it really was. I was too stupid to realize how hard it is to make a living at, like, being an artist. And so we sold a pilot for, I mean, maybe
pennies.
Nothing. And we split it three ways with Doug. And so we didn't really make any money. But the day that the contract closed, I walked into that office and I was like, I quit. I'm out of here. And only after I did that did I realize, wait a minute, like, I can only pay my rent for like another month.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing. But thankfully, I'd painted myself into a corner that I was at the point where I was like, well, I have to make this work. I have no other options.
And I think that's my biggest advice is, like, you know that you have no other options when you know. Like, it would kill you to do anything else.
Right.
And so when you're doing that, then you'll do it. You'll figure it out. For me, I have no other skills. I can't do anything.
Oh, I constantly think, there's so many times in my life where I've stopped and been like, I'm trapped. There's no other option but to keep doing this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I can't. I'm so without skill.
Yeah.
I'm unhirable.
Can't do anything. Anything. Can't put together a toy. I can't grocery shop.
Oh,
I can't.
You should see me try to multiply like 7 times 8.
Oh, I can't pay a check.
Oh,
forget
yeah.
it. Paying forget a check it. Is a nightmare. That is nightmare time for me.
I've had a couple of people in Broadway stars. This is a question that they always react to, and I wonder if it's the same with actors and writers. But the Broadway stars will get a chance to be in Hamilton or something big, and they're on top of the world, and they recognize that's a 6-month gig.
Yeah.
And they're back to auditioning with 400 people to try and get it again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always, you know, a crapshoot if they're going to get
it.
For you guys, do you like that lifestyle? Do you like the lifestyle that you could be right now?
Absolutely not. No. It's terrible.
I'll say that's actually the biggest advice that whenever anyone asks me, I give is the fundamental skill to succeeding is getting comfortable with failing. Understanding that the amount of rejection that we receive on a daily basis is unlike any other profession that anyone goes through. And I think that's actually the reason that most people give up on keep doing this because, you know, even...
Look
even
at my mentions.
Well, you know. But, like, even in this movie, the amount of times that I got a note from someone that said, don't do that or we can't do that or for any number of reasons, it's just not going to happen, let alone the actual negative reactions you get.
I mean, acting is all being rejected. That's the whole craft of acting is being rejected. You go out and you do it one way, and someone's like, do it this way. And the worst actors are the ones that go, no.
Yeah.
I was right. You know, like, you have to take the note and go, okay, I'll change what I was doing. And so that's every second of our day.
It's baked into it, right?
Yeah. It's like we're baked. Rejection is part of what we do, and you got to just get back up.
And I think it's the type of rejection that almost everyone else can't even comprehend the amount of rejection that you get every day, all the time, from every different angle. And the thing that you're seeing up on a screen is the sliver of your life. And so it really is that just learning to go with
it.
To
be comfortable with that. Yeah.
Dan Greger is the co-writer and director of Most Likely to Murder, which is now available on digital, DVD, and on demand. He's currently also a writer on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Adam Pally, the star of the film, who, of course, we've seen in sitcoms like Happy Endings and The Mindy Project. He's also the executive producer on The President Show on Comedy Central. You guys, I can't thank you enough for coming in, talking shop, and being my guest tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you, man. This was so fun.